Good day, everyone, everywhere, and special greetings to all those seated in heavenly places in Yahshua, also called Jesus, our Messiah. We've been going through the book of Genesis. We ended up around chapter 24 and around verse 61 when Rebekah is leaving her homeland, the land of her childhood, and going to meet her husband, whom she has never met before. This is an arranged marriage of a sort. But it's not like the parents got together and decided to arrange the marriage. It's like the prayer of Abraham for his son Isaac. He sends his servant into his kin, the land of his kin, to get a wife for his son. Now, Isaac was 40 years old, and I'm not sure how old Rebekah was. So anyway, she leaves, and Rebekah arose, and her damsels. So she had some servants, female servants, I guess that would be a damsel, and they rode upon the camels. So here the servant who came with the camels loaded up with, provision for the journey, of course, the journey there and the journey back. And also gifts, perhaps the bride price for the wife that he was fetching for his master. And her damsels, they rode upon the camels and followed the man, and the servant took Rebekah and went his way. And Isaac came from the way of the well of Lehi-Roi, for he dwelt in the south country. And Isaac went out to meditate in the field at eventide. And he lifted up his eyes and saw, and behold, the camels were coming. It must have been an exciting time for Isaac, looking forward to getting a wife. And Rebekah lifted up her eyes, and when she saw Isaac, she lighted off the camel, for she had said unto the servants, "What man is that that walketh in the field to meet us?" And the servant said, "It is my master." Therefore she took a veil and covered herself. And the servant told Isaac all things that he had done. So, and we've already heard the story at least twice in the narrative there, in all the detail. So it, rather than repeat it all again, well, we all know the story. If you don't know the story, well, go to my website and pull up the archive for the Wednesday program, and it'll be there for 1 week, or at least until next Wednesday evening. So Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent, and took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her, and Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. So Isaac's mother was dead at this time. And what I wanted to talk about here was several things. One is marriage, and comparing this marriage with the marriage rituals of the world. As you can see, there's no ritual here. There's no dating ritual. There's no ritual romance. And a lot of people would say, unfortunately, that this is a very romantic story. Well, I find that objectionable, because if you go back in time to about the time that this happened, it was way before Rome even existed. So it can't be Rome antics. The antics of Rome. The antics of the love style or gender relationships of Rome. That's what romance is. Is it romantic? Is it the antics of Rome? Or is it not? Well, I say it is not, because the way that romance is practiced today, this would not be considered romantic at all. Yeah, it would be objectionable to most people today. I mean, now we apply the term romance to so much more, because it's just grown. The term romance can be applied to. Why is it not amaranths or some other nation with an ants at the end of it? But it is romance, and I just ask the question, why? Why is it Rome ants? And the reason is because of the Roman Catholic Church and the whole idea. It goes back into the history and the Roman Catholic Church enforcing the whole idea of monogamy and their sway over gender relationships throughout history. And it's, that's, well, really, that's the foundation of the term romance. It comes out of the Roman Catholic Church and also Roman Greco ideals of gender relationship, though the reality was far from the ideal. So romance today has come to embrace every abomination. And I'm not saying that, you know, just if that the gender relationship as the ideal of romance really is the one man, the one woman, and they stay together forever and they never, you know, divorce or get remarried, even if one dies. I mean, this is really the ideal of romance. Though like I said, the ideal is far from the reality. And I've met people that like to brag about the ideal of romance and how it lives in their life. And I think there's a lot of pride there. And I don't think it's not a pretty thing when I see it, when I meet someone. And the first thing they want to tell me is that, well, I've been a Christian for, you know, what, you know, 15 years or 20 years or whatever. And I've been married to the same woman for 21 years. And then they turn right around and they say that, you know, if anyone has ever been divorced, they can never remarry again. And they start enforcing all of these, the ideal of their life that they're taking pride in on others. But that's, that ideal, like I said, is far from the reality. And I do not believe that it's a biblical ideal. There's nothing wrong with one man and one woman staying together for life. And there's nothing wrong if one is widowed and the other one doesn't want to remarry. There's nothing, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but to lift that up and raise that up as, and to almost deify that to the point of almost worship, I do see something wrong with that. Or to lift that ideal up and hit others over the head with it because they fail to live up to the standard that you've lived up to. I see something wrong with that too. But anyway, what I want to talk about is, you know, that there's no dating here. There's no dating ritual going on. Isaac is sent for a wife. And look, Isaac sees this woman for the first time, Rebecca. And he listens. The servant tells Isaac everything. Okay? And Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent. Now, the tent is vacant at this time. He wasn't living in his mother's tent. And you'll notice another thing, that Sarah had her own tent. Where was Abraham? Well, Abraham had his own tent. And that's a whole nother discussion. That's a discussion. It makes the Jezebel and every woman angry, if you want to have that discussion. But that's just a little clue. And so anyway, but that's not where we're going today. So Isaac brought her into her mother Sarah's tent, and he took Rebecca, and she became his wife, and he loved her. And Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. Well, so how did she become his wife? Well, the marriage was arranged. The marriage was arranged by Abraham. He made the arrangements for the marriage. Isaac was obedient in taking Rebecca as his wife. And he took her. You know, I don't know if they had a big feast or anything. I don't see anything written here about that. I see the man was waiting. And I happen to know that Isaac was 40 years old. And I'll bet you that he was still a virgin. And look, he was still doing what? He was serving his father because of the command that even our Messiah repeated, that Adam made. See, because Adam made a declaration. Adam was given dominion over all the earth and certainly over all his seed. And he said, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother? Now, Adam and Eve, they never had a father and mother. But he was a brilliant man. Everyone has this idea that when we talk about Isaac and Jacob and Abraham and Adam and Eve, they were just all a bunch of stupid people. They weren't as smart as us. You know, and that's the idea that people get in their minds, that somehow they were less intelligent because, of course, they didn't have newspapers and encyclopedias, and they didn't have computers and telephones. They didn't have PDAs and cell phones. You know, so they weren't quite as smart as we are. But see, I have another idea. I think that Adam was probably the most intelligent man that ever lived. Because here is a man who was created perfect. I mean, our Heavenly Father, Yahshua, didn't make 100% brain capacity for the first man and then turn to the man and say, well, you know, maybe I'm just going to limit him to 5% of his brain capacity. Because, well, that's what science says we use today. 5, maybe if we're really, really smart, 10% of our brain capacity. You know, it's like, you know, a crude comparison would be the hard drive on my computer. You know, I've got a 300 gigabyte hard drive on my computer, but it's not all the way filled up. I'm not using all that capacity because, you know, even though I've tried, I'm just not using it. I'm speaking hypothetically here, of course, because I have at least 10 computers and a lot more than 300 gigabytes, but I do have a portable 300 gigabyte hard drive, and I haven't filled it up yet. If I've got less than 200 gigabytes of space filled on it, you know, just for a backup of essential files. But you get the idea. I'm not using all that capacity. And science says that we are not using but 5 or 10% of the capacity of our brain. But I believe that Adam had full use of the capacity of his brain. And the fact that men live to be 1,000 years old. So, you know, perhaps that we have enough brain capacity to go on for at least 1,000 years, if not more. So I believe he was a very intelligent man. He wasn't stupid. And when he says, for this cause shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave to his wife and the two shall become one flesh, I believe that he knew what he was talking about. And it's the, for this cause shall a man leave his father and his mother, that I'm focusing in on here. Isaac, so what do you do? What did Isaac do until the cause came? And here was the cause. Here it is. Rebekah shows up for this cause. He takes Rebekah into his mother Sarah's tent. And, well, that becomes Rebekah's tent. And she became his wife. Well, he consummated the marriage. Need I say any more? And that's when she became his wife. And there was more to that going on. It doesn't mean that, you know, if you're walking along the way and you're tempted to, you know, sleep with a woman and you go into her and now she's your wife. It may be that could happen. You know, you don't need to go through a ceremony. You just need to agree with each other and before Yahuwah Almighty. And if you're being obedient to your parents, well, that helps a lot because they have the authority over you. And that's what another meaning of that proclamation or declaration by Adam, that for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother. So the cause to leave your parents, to come out from under their authority is when you get married, when you take a wife and you become one with your wife and you start your own household. That brings you out from under their authority. But then we see, another thing we see, that there's still an authority of your parents over you to a certain degree, and more so, like when a woman leaves her father and her mother, and we're talking about family government as established in the scripture here, and we're going beyond what we've studied so far up through Genesis chapter 24, but we see the family government structure where there's the head of the clan, the patriarch of the clan, who still exercises some authority over his son and his son's family. Now the wife, when she leaves her father and mother, she comes under the covering of another man. The father actually gives her away But we don't see the giving the son away. That's nowhere in, there's not even a vestige of that in any ceremony today, because the son stays in his family. And that's also demonstrated by the name. You know, the woman takes the man's name, but the man keeps his family name. He doesn't get a new family name. So he still stays in, and he is not, still a part of the family government. And perhaps if he is the firstborn, or, well, actually, the firstborn was lawfully, though not always, it was sometimes demonstrated that it was not always the firstborn that took the position of the head of the family. That was called the birthright. And the birthright wasn't, you just inherited everything, so you got to go to the bank and have a holiday and spend all that money. With the birthright and taking the position of the patriarch of the family, you had, yes, you inherited everything. That is, you controlled everything. And I guess you could sell it all and waste it all if you wanted to, but that would not be the responsibility thing to do. Because basically, the head of the clan had the responsibility of overseeing the entire clan. And that's part of family government. And we'll see that as we go through the scriptures. So, and also the parents arrange the marriages. Children are not let out there to go find themselves a mate. And you see that, see the problem with that, with romance as opposed to, obedience to parents and waiting for the cause. And the cause was out of obedience to your parents, because if your parents said no, well, obedience required that you did not. So if a man saw a woman, see, when a man goes to seek a woman for himself, well, then what is he looking for? Usually he's going to be carried away by his emotions and raging hormones and get himself into trouble. We've already seen that demonstrated early on before the flood, where the sons of God saw the daughters of men that they were fair, and they chose of them whoever they wanted. They chose. See, they were acting in disobedience. They weren't listening to the proclamation. They went outside of that proclamation that for this cause. Well, they went out to seek the cause rather than waiting for the cause, and the cause would have come through obedience. And that's what we see demonstrated here. So should parents arrange marriages for their children? And, you know, that is the shame that today's modern church, the corporate churches out there, they don't teach this. They teach their children romance and dating, you know, the ways of the world. You know, go out there and look yourself for a wife, you know, and look at the daughters of men. And try to pick you a fair one, you know, and forget everything else, you know, follow your raging hormones. You know, you need to satisfy the lust of your flesh. And that's how they choose a wife through romance today. That's what they're taught. Date until it's just right and try some out and, you know, play the dating game. And that's how romance works. And then only when you fall in love, then, you know, don't get married to someone that you don't love, but, you know, you gotta wait till you fall in love. Well, that's not how agape love works. Agape love is what comes after marriage. It's the living with that person. It's the loving your neighbor, because your wife or your husband becomes your neighbor. Is there anyone closer when you get married? Is there anyone closer to you? Anyone else that is more qualified to be called your neighbor? So you have to love your neighbors yourself. And that's what it's about. And putting it in those terms, no, it's not romantic, but that's the reality of the situation. You know, two people learning how to live together and loving your neighbors yourself. That's what it's all about. You have to make sacrifices to make it work. So what you do is you don't fall in love and then get married. You get married and then you rise in love. How's that? You don't fall in love and get married. You get married, then you rise in love. And I believe that the church, the corpse ain't going to teach it, because they're following the state, which wants to destroy the family. And yeah, there's some good teaching that comes out of some well-intentioned people, but those people have blinders on. Otherwise, they wouldn't be incorporated with the state now, would they? So, you know, the blind leading the blind, it's not a very pretty picture. But we have his sure word. You know, let us live by that for this cause, and let's be obedient to our parents. It's like any man, any young man worth his salt, is first of all, he's going to ask his own father and say, if he sees a woman out there, he's going to say, should I marry her? And if his father is wise, he's going to say, well, let's get to know the family, son. Let's get to know the family. And I'm going to withhold judgment until I get to know the family, because I don't want any woman taking my boy, my son down. And if he gives his permission, then he goes and he asks the girl's father for her hand in marriage, because, well, she is under a coverture. He has to give her away. These are things that aren't to be taken lightly. But the thing is obedience. I mean, what if a man goes to his son and he says, you know, I've talked to, you know, Joe over there, and he's got a daughter, and I think she'll be a good wife to you. And he's consented. And I know that she's the kind of girl that's going to do what her father said. So we've made arrangements, and you're going to get married on such and such a date. All the arrangements are being made. You know, that just sounds so foreign, doesn't it? It just sounds so foreign. But what an obedient son would say, yes, you know, I trust you, Father. You are a wise father. And an obedient daughter would say yes, because she is an obedient daughter, and they would get married. And then, like Isaac, he would take her as his wife, and he would love her. It says he loved her. It doesn't say he fell in love with her, and then he took her as his wife. She became his wife, and he loved her. And Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. So there was a new woman in his life, and it was Rebekah. Then again, Abraham took a wife, and her name was Keturah. So we got Abraham here. He's past 127 years old. Boy, I hope I'm that hopping good when I'm 100 years old. So anyway, Abraham took a wife. Her name was Keturah, and she bore him Zimram, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shua. So he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 more sons. And Jokshan begat Sheba and Dedan. And the sons of Dedan were Ashurim, Letishim, and Leomim. And the sons of Midian, Ephah, Epher, Hanok, Abida, Elda. And these were the children of Keturah. And Abraham gave all that he had unto Isaac. So Isaac was the firstborn. He did receive the birthright. But unto the sons of the concubines, which Abraham had, Abraham gave gifts and sent them away from Isaac his son, while he yet lived eastward unto the east country. And we'll pick up here when we get back from this break. You're listening to Cross the Border. My website is crosstheborder.org, and I'm Nicholas Arthur.